You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluids?
Kink and leather have the DNA that can transform not just ourselves, but this culture.
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewish who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I hope you are continuing to stay safe and healthy during the quarantine, or maybe you live in Georgia and you're out and about. Whatever you're doing, just take care of yourself. I've got two guests on the show today. Let me tell you about them. Kevin Patterson, who's been on my show before, is an active member of the Philadelphia polyamory community, and he's been practicing ethical non-monogamy since 2002. In 2015, Kevin was inspired to start Poly Role Models, an interview series for people describing their experiences with polyamory. Then he extended the blog's work into nationwide speaking engagements about how race and polyamory intersect. This has led to the writing of his award-winning book, Love's Not Colorblind: Race and Representation in Polyamorous and Other Alternative Communities. Also a great book, although today we're going to talk about a different book. The polyamorous librarian is Alana Phelan, a degreed librarian out of Southern New Jersey. She's a writer, editor, public speaker, and relationship support coach. And she told me I can call her Allie, which will make this easier. Okay. Welcome to the show, Kevin and Allie.
Hey, thank you so much for having us.
Thanks.
So first, we're going to do a quiz. This is something new we're doing on the show, and the quiz is based on what the show is about. So Allie, you can answer first, and then Kevin, you can answer. So I'll say the question once. This sounds very pressure-filled. It's not. Okay, so your series, which we're going to talk about, is called For Hire. Who was the last person you hired, and what did you hire them for?
It's been about, I would say, a million years since Shelter in Place. And I can't remember anything that happened before that.
Okay.
I can't.
Very good. Very good. Kevin?
The last person Alana hired was our friend Angela to edit our book.
No. No. Wait. Yes. Maybe. It was definitely someone to do book work. Oh, right before we had a meeting with the new narrator for audition.
Right.
And we had to reschedule.
Is this for the audiobook?
For the audiobook. We had to reschedule. It ended up being like the day before Shelter in Place went, the reschedule. Because the narrator ended up having a doctor's appointment, and she was like, "Yeah, can we just meet like next week or the week after?" And I was like, "Yeah, no problem. No big deal."
Oops.
And then they were like, "Yeah, so there's this virus thing. I think I'm just going to stay home." And I was like, "Yeah, that sounds like a good idea." And that was the last person. So she hasn't gotten paid yet. But
you think you're going to hire her?
No, we're absolutely going to hire her.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
This is going to sound really good in audiobook form, for sure.
Yes.
Kevin, I'm going to include you in that one, okay?
Because right,
that was
yeah.
a real long answer.
Yeah, definitely.
Not to judge. Okay, so in keeping with the theme of your book, if you were a superhero, what would your superpower be?
I've given this a lot of thought, and I'm going to go with technopathy, the ability to communicate telepathically with machines and computers and the internet. I feel like I just walk around being Google all the time. And also like paying myself out from ATMs at random.
Okay, so you do it and then also hack some systems while you're doing it?
100%.
Okay. What about you, Allie?
I also think about this way too much. And for me, it's always been healing and regeneration because I have had a very messed up back since I was 25. And the rest of my body is not doing so well very many years later. So I've always wanted the power to be healthy.
I'm totally there with you as a chronic back pain sufferer since I was like 16. But yeah. But I think my superpower would be like teleportation. I want to be able to go anywhere at any time just by like snapping my fingers. Seriously.
That's a close second for me.
Yeah. And that would come in handy now, really handy.
Yeah. Well, see, my thing is always like, you know, how can I have a power that no one will ever hunt me down for? Because I was very much a reader of the X-Men in like the mid to late 80s and early 90s. And that was very much the, you know, hunt them down period of time. So it's like, how can I have like the lowest key power that does me the most good?
Got it. Yeah. Okay, next question. Cheese fries, decadent and delicious, or regret it later?
I feel like both.
I feel like you read the book.
I did. Okay, so it's both for you?
I do love cheese fries.
Okay. Has either of you ever stayed at the Four Seasons in Georgetown?
Sadly, no.
No, and I don't care. Like, I don't know why this is a sadly thing.
Okay.
It's a nice hotel.
I'm sure it is. It's the Four Seasons. So my listeners know that I don't normally do fiction, but here we are doing fiction 2 weeks in a row on the show. I just think sometimes it's good to switch it up, try new things. Of course, Kevin's been on the show, so some of you may recognize his voice. He's talked about polyamory and communities of color. So when he reached out about this new project, I was like, oh yeah, of course, before kind of getting into what it actually was. But the good news is it's called For Hire, and it's a series of people of color-centered superhero novels. Kevin, what inspired you to write these books?
Well, like you said, I was on here before talking about Love's Not Colorblind. And like Love's Not Colorblind was kind of a hard book to write, where I was dealing with a lot of like racism. Like if you read the book, like it's up to the date of writing, I'm talking about like racist stuff that's happening in the world, you know? And I gave myself a break. I had watched like there's a Black Mirror episode, San Junipero, about a couple of women who bond in sort of a technological landscape, and it inspired me to write about a couple of young women who meet and bond over tech. And next thing you know, I had a book that was longer than Love's Not Colorblind. Like it took me like a month and a half to write a first draft, and I just started writing and writing and writing. Like I put Love's Not Colorblind completely on hold and wrote a book that ended up being longer. And then I passed it off to Elena, and she had some critiques of it.
Okay, Allie, so I read that you were supposed to be the editor of the book, but you are, in fact, the co-author. So how did that happen?
Mostly it happened because Kevin doesn't know the difference between what an editor is and a writer is, which, you know, works in my favor.
Yeah.
I would give him some feedback, and he would say, oh, yeah, write that. That sounds good. And, you know, I didn't have the heart to tell him that that was his job, and so I did. And there we were with a book that was a little bit me. It was a lot him, but it was a little me too. And so I felt like at a certain point when he said, oh, yeah, you know, no matter what, I'm going to put your name on the cover. I was like, that's ridiculous at the beginning. And then by the end, I was like, yeah, absolutely put my name on that thing.
So. Yeah, when it was just notes, it was like, okay, this is my book and I'm taking some notes from Allie. But there was a point where there was like an entire chapter that Elena said this could be done better. And I was like, you know what? It'll be better if you just write it. And then once we got to that point, I was like, your name's going on the cover. You're a writer now.
I feel like when we were, when you were pulling nails out of the floor in my house and we were talking about character and plot development in depth, that's really when I was earning that paycheck beyond what an editor does. And you probably also were earning money beyond what an author should be doing, paying an editor. So whatever, give and take.
There we go.
Kevin, I want to set the scene for listeners about this fascinating world that you've created in the book. So can you give me kind of a nutshell synopsis of the major things that people should know about this world?
Well, the first book is called For Hire Operator, and like to set the scene, an operator is sort of a hero for hire, whereas in this universe, superheroes are more official, public-facing, go-to-work-everyday endorsements kind of superhuman. If you don't want the fame and the glitz and the glamour, you don't want to be public-facing, but you do want to use your powers for some sort of goal, you can sign up, get an account, and become an operator where you can just get like independent anonymous paychecks to do a job. And that could be jobs that are like heroic or jobs that are sort of off in the margins, murder, kidnapping, you know, that sort of thing. And so our main character is the best operator in the business, whereas she's got a relationship with a girlfriend who is the best superhero in the business. Nobody knows the two of them are together, and it causes a lot of friction in the relationships as they sort of cross the line between having a relationship of privacy and a relationship of secrecy.
Right. And the way that people have superpowers is through what?
Generally, superheroes have what's called GVS, genetic variant syndrome, which is essentially mutants. But our two main characters, they actually created their own path of superhumanity by way of technology.
Right. And then there's also magic.
just to throw a curveball in there.
Right. Allie, like other superhero universes, this book deals a lot with good versus evil, but it seems to me that in the world that you guys created, it seems more complicated and nuanced. Do you agree with that?
I do, and I don't think that, you know, we've had a very black and white good versus evil kind of superhero universe in a long time. I think if we did, we wouldn't have movies like Civil War. Right? We have looked at things in a much more complicated way in comic books and comic book adaptations for decades now, because we can look as a society and say like, oh, you know what? Wars are complicated. The reason we go to wars are complicated. The way that we treat soldiers afterwards are complicated. And so as society stops trying to put like, you know, to glorify one side as good and bad and to actually look at things as nuanced, you see that reflected in that industry. And so it's really hard to write a story that's all good, all bad, and not have that sense that it comes off as cheesy, right? Mm-hmm. So that's reflected in our story as well. If we told a story where everybody was good and good and good and good and good and evil and evil and evil and evil, I think it would come off cheesy.
But of course, it's also great. It's great conflict and tension between the two main characters that they are. They're in these different realms, and it's possible that they may at some point cross paths, not as as adversaries.
Oh yeah. And the thing, yeah, you can absolutely take either person's side in the conflict in the book, right, Kev?
Yeah, definitely. Like, what would be an interesting exercise, and I know we're not going to do it because our plates are already full, would be to write the whole book again from Double M. Yeah, that would be an amazing exercise.
We almost did that. Well, I mean, we almost went back and while we were working on the book and tried to do one chapter than the other chapter or something like that. I think I remember at one point there was like a beginning of a draft where it was from M's perspective. We did a lot of weird stuff in the beginning when we were trying to like turn the draft into a real book.
There's a point in like, so the whole book is from Sana's perspective. There's a point where she can't see what's going on late in the book. We actually ended up releasing online only as an ebook only one chapter from Double M's perspective where you see what Sana can't see in that moment. And it's actually something I'm really proud of. It's actually something I really like and I think really adds to the narrative, but it didn't fit, it wouldn't have fit in Operator. So we just released it as a bonus chapter that's online only.
Ah, okay.
I cried.
Oh, okay. We have to take our first break and hear from our sponsors who make this show possible. I love you, sponsors. Special shout out to UberLube, to MyGirlFund.com, to Calm, C-A-L-M, Calm, the app. Really appreciate you guys supporting this show. Okay, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about future technology and government corruption. So you don't want to go anywhere. You may have noticed the flowers are blooming, the grass is growing, and it's time to mow your lawn. Thanks to our sponsor, Manscaped, you can trim the hedges below the belt safely and efficiently. You know I don't like speed around the bush, so I won't. Everyone could use a little trim of their pubic hair. Manscaped, the only men's brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming, is here to make sure your balls, people with balls, are smooth and smelling nice. After all, it's time for some spring and, let's face it, summer cleaning. I actually like to do grooming with a partner. I find it really sexy, but I've used razors before and I'm always afraid to nick their genitals. Scary. You have to use the right tools for the job. When I use the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0, I know it's safe and it always does a great job. The Perfect Package 3.0 kit comes with the lawnmower, the waterproof cordless body trimmer, anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer, and the Crop Reviver to round out your manscaping routine. This third generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce manscaping accidents. Millions of balls are about to be nick-free thanks to Manscaped advanced skin-safe technology. Subscribe to the Perfect Package and get a new replacement blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered to your door every 3 months. For a limited time, subscribers get two free gifts: the Shed Travel Bag, a $39 value, and the patented high-performance reduced chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. You should really try this out, and I've got a deal for you to get started. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Tristan at manscaped.com. That's right, go to manscaped.com and get 20% off with free shipping when you use the code Tristan. Your balls will thank you. Hey everyone, Tristan here. You know, it's a myth that you only need lube as you age. I've been using lube since I was 20 years old because it makes everything better. I used to be a water-based only girl. And don't get me wrong, I love my water-based lube, but sometimes I prefer a silicone lube for the job. I love Uber Lube, especially for hand jobs, vulva massages, vaginal and anal penetration with fingers and penises. UberLube's simple ingredient list, silicone and a little bit of vitamin E, that's all, makes it great for people with sensitivities to other lubes. Plus, I just can't use lube anymore if it doesn't have a pump, must have pump. Right now, they're offering Sex Out Loud listeners a special offer. 10% off and free shipping when you use my code Tristan at uberlube.com. That's 10% off and free shipping. Just use code Tristan at uberlube, uberlube.com. Uberlube lets you feel what you want to feel. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with the co-authors, Kevin and Allie, of For Hire. It's a series of novels that centers people of color who are also superheroes and a bunch of other things too, which we'll get to. So, Kevin, you obviously are addressing these themes of technology. Like you said, the two main characters have come by their powers via technology. But I found the technology was very detailed and very specific. How did you come up with what the back end looked like, for lack of a better way to phrase it, and make it sound so realistic?
I've been following sci-fi for a long time, and like I know there are like certain details that I got wrong, but I was able to sort of borrow from a lot of sci-fi influences, and then sort of in the way that the characters themselves do, it was a matter of sort of making sci-fi real, where like there's a book somewhere where they explain, say, the technology of Star Wars and like what it would take to make like a lightsaber real or an X-Wing fighter real. Of course, like it wouldn't be possible because it would cost, you know, millions and millions of dollars for very little payoff. Put in a book, you can do whatever you want. So I was able to sort of take things like nanotechnology and make them feasible for a couple of teenage girls to create and have like fully functional by the time they were adults, you know? So I was able to just sort of take sci-fi, make it real, even though it would be cost prohibitive and labor intensive in the real world.
Allie, obviously one of the main plot points in the first book is government corruption and shadow government and evil doings. Which feels so very relevant right now. I mean, where did that thought come from, that piece? And do you believe some of it? Because I feel like more and more now I've become like a conspiracy theorist, which I never was before, in that I believe the government is doing evil things every day.
So all that came from Kevin's head. And it's really interesting to me because I got so wrapped up in the characters that I think that the first time I read through, well, I didn't read through the draft. We kind of went chapter by chapter. I sort of missed a lot of that, like the plot stuff, because I was, you know, a lot of the stuff I was doing at first was editing. And so it wasn't until I went through the book like two or three times that I was like, oh, look at all that plot. Oh my goodness. And I'm like, oh, there's a lot going on here. Oh, that character did that? And yeah, so like, don't get me wrong. I like got that there was like shadow government stuff going on. But it wasn't until like my like I said, like the third time that I was going through the book and we were almost completely done with it that I was seeing like all the little bits and pieces that Kev had laid out to like sort of get you there and be like, oh, that was actually like a twist. And my goodness, I am like not a huge conspiracy theorist. I really just believe that when you take a lot of people who have a lot of privilege and raise them in a bubble, that they respond according to that bubble and have a very difficult time seeing outside of it. And that just keeps going on and on and on over and over again, almost like generationally. And I think it's really destructive to have a government that is made up entirely of people who come from that same bubble, which makes me, I would like to think, an optimist, I think. But I do think that this concept of like shadow governments and stuff, it's always there in thrillers. And it's always going to be there in thrillers because there are always going to be people who are less optimistic than me. And generally speaking, I'm always a little too optimistic. So you're probably a lot closer than I am.
I mean, I think when I watched all those movies and all those thrillers and read those books, I could get into the fantasy. And now I feel like it's The Handmaid's Tale, which is that it's like, it's exactly parallel to what's going on in our lives. And it feels quite current and real. And that makes it scarier, actually. But okay, so Allie, you sort of lobbed this one to Kevin because Kevin came up with the government angle. So do you want to comment on that, Kevin?
Yeah, and something that I like about this universe that we've put together is it's obviously different because superheroes, but it's not that different. So you can see a lot of the parallels in reality versus what we got on page. And so like some of the stuff that I say about like the pharmaceutical industry in Operator is really how I feel about the pharmaceutical industry, like how it works and not always to the benefit of the people that it serves. Same deal with the government in general. And like, that's regardless of like party affiliation or what have you. I don't believe that it is optimized for the people that it serves, you know. In reality, it's because we have a lot of flawed people, the way Alana describes. In this book, it could also be flawed people, but it could be shadow government stuff that our titular operator has to confront. So I would like to believe the best in people. Nothing in this reality shows me the best in people. So in our book, where we clearly have a better reality, and a reality that we document as better, the problem is the shadow government.
Right, right. Well, it also explores this theme, and you talked about this when you first kind of summarized, which is about being a public-facing person versus being private or underground or stealth, or and in the case of Sana, almost reclusive, and the tension there. So I wondered... I wonder what you think about being a public-facing person, Kevin.
I'm like a lot of the double M stuff I draw from myself. And granted, like I'm not nearly as public or as popular as double M. Like I'm a medium fish in a tiny pond. But the idea that like she has to she has to be on all the time, just as a matter of her persona, that she has to keep sort of a squeaky clean image, even though she's about 90% squeaky clean, but she has to hide that 10%, which includes her girlfriend, who is an operator, and operators have like a terrible stigma. It's a balancing act, you know, like being someone who people see or like or want to admire or what have you, and then knowing that there's going to be like this enhanced scrutiny that you're going to get dinged for stuff that most people wouldn't notice in others. That's something that Double M has to deal with on a day-to-day basis, being like the most popular superhero in the country.
Yeah, I mean, I just felt that I felt a personal connection to that part of it, and I wondered if like there was a little bit of you in there, because it felt authentic, that sort of struggle and tension.
I'd say the little bit of me in there is that I used my own perspective, but at the same time I realized that like if I was that kind of popular, I'd be doing that kind of stuff, where I wrote that not only does she watch YouTube videos of her own exploits that people put online, she writes, you know, she films her own response videos thanking the people who put up the originals. I'm like, that's something I would do. Like, just, you know, as a little shout out to people who respect the work.
So my favorite thing about this book, this is for both of you, that my favorite thing, these characters are incredibly well drawn. They are not one-dimensional at all. And they have these amazing powers. They are trying to save the country. But yet their relationships are pretty relatable. It's like, okay, we now have the technology to heighten your senses, cloak you to near invisibility, do these amazing things. But relationships, yeah, like you still have to figure those out the hard way. In other words, there's no hack for relationships, and no one is better or best at relationships in this book.
No, no, they're not. And the thing is they're a long-term couple. They've been together since high school. You know, for other people, this would be, I guess, the time where you figure it out or you break up. For them, they've been on this trajectory where they went, you know, after high school, they became superheroes together briefly. And Sana said, you know what, the limelight's not for me. And Double M was like, the limelight is absolutely for me. And it became, you know, sort of a point where they, you know, went on these different paths and the paths diverged and they just kept getting wider and, you know, but they love each other. You know, what do you do when you're on such different paths and one of them has a stigma that the other kind of buys into a little? Mm-hmm. You know, what does that mean? You know, what does it mean to be, I don't know, the person who like meets someone at a strip club, falls in love with a stripper, and then is kind of like, ooh, but you're a stripper. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
right.
That's awful. And you know, it's awful. Like, you know, as the person who met the person at work, you know it. And yet there you are. You have to sit with that discomfort. You have to get through it. So, I mean, that's kind of like how I saw it a little.
But I also mean just the nitty gritty of how there are several polyamorous or non-monogamous characters in the book. And it just struck me that their negotiations like weren't any better or worse than any other poly negotiation I've ever seen. So I'm assuming that was deliberate, Kevin.
I mean, yeah, on both our parts, I think. And then like Elena and I, we've both been non-monogamous for a long time and we've seen some like fantastic successes in our relationships and we've seen some like miserable failures. And we didn't want that to go unsaid. Like I've seen polyamorous media where it's where everything's perfect and I've seen it where everything's wrong and neither of those are really correct. Like all of my work, even with poly role models, was a matter of showing imperfect people, showing their flaws, but also showing their successes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the relationships in the book are a lot. It's sort of a wonder anyone has time for superheroing, actually, because they also have to like take into account other people's feelings, negotiations, like guidelines. Did they do the wrong thing?
Well, that's so funny because I feel like they have like so little relation, like they have a lot of headspace given, but like also they have a lot of freedom. You know what I mean? Like,
but they're trying to save the world. What do you mean? Or the country?
I think that the time that they actually spend together on the page is not significant. Like Sada doesn't spend a lot of time on the page with Double M or the other character that we haven't mentioned yet, who is the best character in the book.
because, okay, so I call that character Voss.
Yes.
But what do you want to call that character? Because the character has three names, which is just, first of all, it's like an insider joke, I think, because whenever I go somewhere with someone who has two names, and by that I mean almost everyone I know has two names. Either they are a sex worker, so they have a sex worker name and then their legal name, or they're in the kink scene and they have a scene name that they use when they're like on FetLife and they go to conferences and stuff like that, and then they have a legal name. Some people are writers and have pseudonyms, so it's like everyone else in the room knows their other name. So I feel like I'm really great at being able to handle this, whereas other people have trouble, like, which name do I call you? But I thought this was like an inside joke, which is like, we all have all these different names, and even years into it, you might discover like, oh wait, you have another name?
Yeah, no, Kevin Alana are just Kevin Alana, so...
I mean, that's, yeah, but like,
but that it was, seemed like an inside joke. I liked it.
No, it definitely was. I mean, like, it wasn't intentional, but sort of once we got into it, I realized that that's sort of how it went. And like, I'd explain that to people, like, I'd be talking to, like, even if I was talking to Elena, I'd be like, well, you know, what if I know you as Elena, but someone else knows you as a polyamorous librarian, and neither one of us knows the other name. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of how the conflict plays out. Like, that's sort of how the love triangle plays out, in that everybody knows a different aspect of these people that they're into, and nobody knows the whole thing.
Okay, so let's talk about Magisteria, aka Voss, aka Charlie. Why do you think, Allie, that they're the best character in the book?
I just think from the get-go that Voss is the character who had the most charisma on the page. Found them to be entrancing. Loved seeing non-binary representation right there on the first page. And really enjoyed this. See, you have to understand that the whole thing for me is like, Kevin won me over with my least favorite thing, which is mixing superheroes and magic.
Okay.
And then he threw in this character who's like charming and dazzling in like a very literal way, because a magician, mm-hmm. who is also like an actual real magician, who is also an operator. And I was just like, oh, who is this character? This is exciting. You know, you tell me that someone's an assassin, and I'm just like, yeah, cool, assassins, that's been done. It's like, oh, this is the best superhero in the world. Cool, that's great. She's like a manic pixie dream girl. Fantastic. It's like, oh, here's an assassin who is also a magician, who is also secretly does real magic. I was like, okay, now you have me. And they're non-binary. Okay, yeah, Kev, you got me. Okay, fine, I'm right here. I got it. I'm right here. So that was my in. That's how he got me.
They are quite compelling, and also because they have this intense superpower that even our main characters don't have, which is magic. Kev, are they your favorite too? Do you have a favorite?
Double M is actually my favorite, and Double M is my favorite because I like that 90% good 10% undercover. Like, there's a 10% shady, but usually it's like good intentioned shady. Whereas the other 90% is public facing, outwardly good intentioned. And I kind of like that balance.
Mm-hmm. And her outfit is amazing too. The way she's drawn on the cover is really hot. Okay, that was superficial of me, but we're going to take a break. And we are going to talk more about this series just after these commercials. I'm sure you follow at least one porn star Instagram account that's been deleted with no explanation. YouTube and Facebook are censoring content, and dating apps are full of bots. It's becoming more and more difficult for people to connect, especially intimately online. MyGirlFund.com allows members to form virtual relationships with amazing women. MyGirlFund.com, you can meet, message, share photos and videos, and cam with women in private. Listen, if you know me, you know that two of my biggest passions are people experiencing pleasure in diverse, shame-free ways, and folks getting paid fairly for their labor. It's really difficult for women to get paid for virtual adult work without risking personal exposure. Many women are willing to do dirty chat or share nude content for money, but safe and discreet platforms are rare. MyGirlFund allows its female members to control their exposure. They connect with who they want to connect with, control how they want to interact, and decide what they charge for these interactions. MyGirlFund has been around since 2009, providing space for people to have the intimate interactions that they want. Sign up at MyGirlFund.com/Tristan and get ready to meet and make connections in a safe, private, adult community. Hey, you guys, it's Tristan. You know me for creating various forms of media centered around sexuality, gender, relationships, feminism, and pop culture. Well, I've taken a big risk and I'm ready to do something completely different. And I'm hoping that people who like my existing work will follow me on this trip. I'm working on a memoir, which is focused on my own coming of age story, my coming out, and it's woven with my father's story. It's about growing up. It's about multi-generational queer experience and history, love, loss, and the meaning of home. This new book and the writing I'm doing now in general is not just a departure in genre from my previous books. It's really outside my comfort zone. I'm hoping that you might take a look, and if you want to support me, you can become my patron on Patreon. I've wanted to write this memoir for more than 15 years, but I've been terrified to share this really personal story with the public. You know, I joke that I'm comfortable telling you about my love of butt plugs, but it feels way scarier to tell you about my family, my innermost thoughts, my mental health, and one of the most significant events of my life, the death of my father. I hope you'll support me. You can go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino. Thanks. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. So we've been digging into this incredible series of novels called For Hire with its two co-authors, Kevin Patterson and Alana Phelan. You guys, I want to send people to the book, how they can find the book. If you want this book in paperback, it is available on Amazon. If you want this book in an electronic format, you can get it most anywhere you get your ebooks, right? Is that right?
That is correct.
And when do you think the audiobook might come out?
That's getting a little bit difficult. Like, we've been working on the ebook for, or the audiobook for Operator for a while. Our voice actress is almost finished, but I know coronavirus is holding everything up. Mm-hmm. And for Hire audition, we're only just now in the process of getting our two performers, because audition goes back and forth between two main characters, and we want to have somebody different for each. So I mean, COVID is cramping our style.
COVID's cramping a lot of people's style and plans and what they thought that week was going to look like that month. I mean, all of us are. I'm a planner. It's very hard for me, like, because I could usually tell you six months out, like, what I'm doing and where I'm going to be. And the fact that I don't know is really anxiety producing. Do you have that experience just personally?
I mean, in general, yeah. Like, I'm sitting on a lot of paperback copies of all three books, like the two For Hire books and Love's Not Colorblind, because everything that I was supposed to go to and sign books at has been canceled this year. Like, it's ruining everything, and also, like, it's ruining a lot of lives, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, Allie, can you still do your job from home as a librarian?
So I haven't worked in a library for a couple years. I'm actually... I have this thing that's wrong with me. It's sort of motion based. It's possibly vestibular migraines. I've spent a lot of time in MRI tubes over the past couple of years. They're still trying to get like an actual diagnosis on me. So I've just been mostly writing, editing, speaking, that sort of thing for the past couple of years. So... But a lot of my friends are still librarians, and they are still kind of working if they're in the city. I'm not really sure what the suburban librarians are doing. It's been really tough, though. They're talking about in Philadelphia laying people off, and I'm not exactly sure how they're going to do it or who gets laid off. A lot of librarians are still doing story times, but they're not actually doing them like officially. So it doesn't count as work, but also I think that they feel like if they're not doing it, they're not like proving their worth. So it just becomes very complicated. And I've seen this with librarians from all over the country. I'm not just like talking about Philadelphia or trying to like, you know, say that this is just my Philadelphia friends. It's very difficult to try to do something, which is ridiculous because there's so much about librarianship that can be done from home. Right. It's just that the way that the whole system is set up, working from home has always been incredibly difficult, especially for people in smaller libraries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So because I just wanted to address that, but I'm getting back to the book now. I have no way to sort of transition. I'm just going there. Go with me, people. Okay, Kevin. So we've gone over this, that many of your characters are people of color. They have varied genders and sexual orientations, some defined, some not. The main characters are polyamorous. I know you made these deliberate decisions around representation. Tell me why.
So Allie and I, we're both such avid comic readers, and we're both such avid sci-fi consumers. Something that came up a bunch, and like I've talked about before, is that when you follow a lot of sci-fi and you follow a lot of fantasy, something you see a lot of are these universes that are sort of theorized as being without oppression, without, you know, transphobia, homophobia, racism, etc. Meanwhile, like the story still follows a cis-het white guy. So because of that, like we wanted to like veer away from that, and we wanted to not just we wanted to make sure that we had a sci-fi universe. If the oppression was not the same, we wanted to actually address why it's not the same. Like Star Trek technically doesn't have oppression, but like why? You know, how did we get there? They never really explain. So we wanted to make sure that we had a universe that explained that, like, in the same way that when people of privilege give a fuck, they can actually enact social change. But in this universe, the people with privilege are superheroes. Like, these are people with actual powers, not just social capital or what have you. And they pushed the needle in terms of how representation worked and how people got, how their opportunities changed. In our second book, Audition, we explained that there was like a trans hero who addressed at the point of a single punch when they were being misgendered. And as soon as that happened, it changed the conversation. And if this happens in the 70s, how is it going to look in the, you know, in the 2010s? And so our main character in Audition, Vanessa, she's a trans woman who's not dealing with the kind of wild shit that trans women are dealing in our 2010s, you know, our 2020s. So we wanted to make sure that we had that, not just characters that fit an identity as a gimmick. These characters are not defined by it. They're informed by it. Like, we're not giving you a trans girl pain narrative. We're not giving you a coming out story. We're giving you a dope superhero story that stars a trans woman, and that will affect the decisions that she makes or the way that she moves or the way the world sees her.
And do you feel like that's where comics and superheroes are going in general? That there's been a move to diversify these stories?
There's been some moves in some places. Alec can speak on it better in terms of prose and novels and young adult stuff. But I know, like, some of the stuff that I see in comic books, it's still cishet white guys trying to say, like, well, now we're putting in some black people, and they're writing it wrong, and it comes off as anywhere between condescending and straight up offensive. So, like, it's more about giving people opportunities to tell their own stories. And yeah, like, that's something I see in comic books, but Allie can talk about it better in terms of prose.
I mean, Kev, you didn't even mention our two favorite new characters in comic books.
Oh God, I thought about them. I didn't bring them up at all.
You gonna do it? You gonna do it?
You got it.
Okay. Safe Space and what's the other one called?
Oh, Safe Sex.
Snowflake.
Safe Sex?
No. Safe Space and Snowflake.
Snowflake, yes, thank you. Yes, so there are two new superhero characters being introduced, And it's been kind of a PR nightmare for them. Oh, because they introduce these two characters. One's non-binary and creator seems to have spoken to absolutely no non-binary people about the creation of these characters whatsoever. It's been a disaster. And Cat Black did a whole like revamping and it was beautiful. It's a wonderful video. You should absolutely watch it. It touches on exactly why these characters were created all wrong and redesigns the characters. And she does such a great job.
Ugh. Agreed.
But yeah, I mean, so Kev was saying I can speak a little bit, especially to YA, because I'm a librarian. I did 2 years on the Rainbow Committee, which is like you read a bunch of queer books that are made for, you know, picture books and made for kids all the way up to like 18. And, you know, you make a list and then that list goes out to everybody and then librarians know what to order and kids know what to read so they can find books for, you know, for queer kids and for people who want to read about queer kids. And some of it's fiction, some of it's nonfiction. And the publishing industry in a lot of ways in that demographic is focused on own voices, which means they want authors who are reflective of the voices. It's not always true, but for a huge part of the time it is. I would say maybe 75% of the time, which in publishing is pretty amazing. Meanwhile, you see these books being published for adults and you're just like, you know, slapping your forehead because once again, you know, here's a white or white passing author who is putting out a book about, like, I don't know, their travels through Mexico or Tibet or whatever. And, you know, there are all these wonderful people of color who are putting out books with these, like, you know, putting them out themselves or having to go through these really small presses because these giant companies are ignoring everybody but these white authors. And it's just been so depressing. And so when Kev was like, yeah, I want books where we're represented, I was just like, yeah, absolutely. I will help you. I will absolutely help you. And, you know, when you were talking earlier, Tristan, about like all the feelings that people were having and the conversations and stuff, you know, we can write about superheroes using nanotechnology to like punch supervillains who are using magic or, you know, have genetic variants or whatever. Like we can use all those words, but if our characters are polyamorous and they're not having like regular, normal polyamorous conversations, we're not representing people like us very well. So we may as well keep it as realistic as possible there, because how often do we get to see ourselves represented?
I mean, it sounds like it's the same problem kind of across all industries, which is like, it's about who's in the room for TV and film, like who's in the writer's room. And then for books, it's like who's being given the book contract, who's being given the platform to tell the story. It's interesting that you told this story about the people who went horribly wrong. Like in some ways they were like, oh, we should diversify our book, right? That was probably the meeting they had. But then to not bring on a co-writer, to not even talk to a non-binary person and then write a non-binary character is always going to fail.
Yeah. And like, and something that popped up in like Love's Not Colorblind was like, what is that show? Orange is the New Black, where I think it was like the fourth season, which was my last season watching it, where the character Black Cindy said some things where I'm like, I don't think a Black woman would say that. And then I found out that there were no Black women at all in the writer's room. And I was like, mm-hmm. Yeah, somebody should have been there to check on this content. When it comes to like us and for hire, we make sure to actually hire some consultants. We hired some people to read through our stuff, where especially with audition, neither Elena or I are trans women. And we wanted to make sure we had some trans women who read through it and felt like, and make sure that we got it right. And we were able to sort of like talk it over and retool a couple of things just to make sure that we weren't overstepping in terms of identity. One of them actually cried at the end, which I feel is like one of the highest forms of flattery. Even with the character Voss, Magisteria, Charlie, Alana's kid looked in on the character, and like there was like a detail in there that we were not sure whether we should leave or trash. And we ended up talking with Alana's kid, and they were like, okay, I see what you're talking about. This is why you should leave that detail in. And just getting other voices, getting other perspectives, you know, because you can't always, because you're not always going to get it right. And to the people who need that representation, if it reads as wrong, it's going to get trashed, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's why all of it matters. And I think you've done a really good job here also at kind of just mixing it up. Like in this particular universe, there's a lot of different kinds of people. And yet they're still addressing sort of some of the mainstream problems that we are facing in America, which I appreciated. Okay, so the first two books are out. The third book is out. So it's the first one is called Operator. The second one, Audition. The third one is called Supercell. Yes. When is that out?
We are working on that now. We want to get it done by this summer, but like COVID problems, you know, like it's hard to stay productive in a pandemic. Like right now I'm working at home 40 hours a week and also homeschooling my kids. Mm-hmm. So like we're not able to keep the same schedule as we had when everything was quote unquote normal, but we're hoping to get it out this summer.
Great. Okay. So they can find it on Amazon or where you get ebooks.
Yes.
I want to tell people how to find you. Kevin is at Poly Role Models on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. And there's also a Facebook page for the series, which is facebook.com/forhiremag. MAG stands for magazine because there's a magazine which covers the sort of world of superheroes and operators and ranks them. And it's sort of like an industry trade publication that also interests like regular people who follow superheroes. Okay. Alana Phelan is at Polyamorous Librarian on Facebook and Instagram and at Hello Librarian on Twitter. Well, I wish you really good luck getting this third book out, especially considering the circumstances. We're not going to hold you to that deadline. Okay. I want all my listeners to say, yeah, we're not going to, like collectively at home right now when you're listening, because, you know, things are weird right now. And I think we need to give people a lot of room and change our expectations. Yeah. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks for having
us. Can I tell you the story of how I met you?
Oh yes, please. Let's tell that story.
So I went to BEA, the Book Expo,
which is the big trade convention. It's like a gazillion people, and it's at like the Jacob Javits Center in New York. Often.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think it was my first year there, and I think I was in library school still, maybe, or it was my maybe it was my maybe I had been a librarian for like a year. And so I went to this big, giant industry thing, and I was like walking around, and there were all these different lines for all these authors, and I saw your name, and I recognized it, and I went up to get a book that you had edited signed, and I said something about being polyamorous, and you said, you know, actually, you're not the first polyamorous person I've talked to. There's quite a few people here. And it was the first time that I ever felt like I wasn't like alone.
Wow.
That there were like not, you know, like I was surrounded by like stealth polyamorous people. Like because I had never been part of like a big community before. I knew that there was a community in Philadelphia and I'd like sort of dipped my toe in a little bit. But the idea that like somewhere like around me, there were like teachers and like librarians and other like professionals who were polyamorous and I just didn't know who they were. That was like a really amazing, validating experience. And I just want to thank you for it.
Oh, I love that story.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't remember this encounter, but sorry.
Why would you? It's like one person out of a whole bunch.
But yeah, I think I had that experience earlier today. I was on a Zoom call and I felt like people were talking about just shit at work and people's expectations and bad management. And I just felt like, oh, you know what? I can relate, even though I can't relate to the specifics, I can relate to a piece of everything everyone's saying here. And it does make you feel less alone. So I'm glad I could do that for you. That's so sweet.
The Podcast Collective Pleasure Podcasts got together and everyone is sharing their number one tip for sex and intimacy during the time of COVID-19. So we are going to share one of those.
Hi, I'm Jace.
And I'm Dedeker. We're from the Multiamory Podcast. We're answering the Pleasure Podcast question of the month. What is my number one sex tip for quarantine?
Make sure it's okay for your partner to say no to sex. It seems counterintuitive, but research shows that couples who are in the habit of giving a positive response to their partner saying no actually leads to the couple having more sex overall.
If you want more research-driven advice for all kinds of relationships, check out the Multiamory Podcast.
Okay, so we're wrapping up here. You know when I used to have that long list of people on my team? Well, guess who's on my team, people? Raymond Johnson. Raymond Johnson is the senior producer. He's the engineer. He's the editor. He's the head of guest services. And so big, big thanks to Raymond on the board today. We have new episodes go up on podcast platforms on Mondays. So keep that in mind when you're thinking about, oh my gosh, when does the next episode come out? And until then, you can catch me on social media at Tristan Terramino across all platforms. You can check out my Patreon, patreon.com/TristanTerramino. And then the show is on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. So hopefully we will see you there. You can leave us messages on any of those social media channels and we will get them. Till next time.